And welcome inside episode 111 of Breaking Bats, presented by Not For Long Media. My name is Justin Ayers. We're back. It's been a little bit since we've been on kind of a regular-ish schedule, been traveling around, doing a little Florida spring training, which we'll talk about here in a second. But I am joined this week for an introduction, a news wrap-up around the league by my guy, Ricky Finkel. Ricky, it's great to see you. There's a lot to talk about in this like last week or so before baseball opening day officially happens. So, Ricky, how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing good, Justin. Good to be here. Good to be talking about baseball again. Everything's back. Things are going. It's nice to be back in the swing of things. No pun intended. Yeah, it always feels like baseball kind of dies down a little bit during spring training. And then right before the season comes back on, everything just breaks. People get hurt. New storylines come about. So it's nice to be talking baseball again.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's weird. Like the last days of spring training, like at this point, like I'm sure the players are like, can we just quit it with the Grapefruit League at this point? I would actually like to go north and like go actually play regular games. So yeah. And plus like guys are still getting hurt and it's weird. And like, we'll talk about like the Yankees and LeMahieu. And yeah, there's just, if you get hurt in the last few days of spring training, that has to be like the top worst feeling of all time in games that don't count. But we did want to start this week with baseball officially kicked off on Tuesday or Wednesday morning in Seoul, South Korea for the Seoul series between the Dodgers and the Padres. I'll be honest. I like to think of myself as a big baseball guy. I forgot they were doing this and they played at 6 a.m. Eastern or 3 a.m. West Coast time. Were you aware that the opening day was today?
I think slightly I was aware, but you know, not aware enough that I was waking up at 6 a.m. to watch the game. I mean, I was lucky enough that I woke up a little bit before the last pitch ended, and I got to catch the bottom of the ninth, even though, you know, nothing really happened there. But yeah, it just seems like a weird move to me to want to start the season off at such a weird time, especially with these West Coast teams. So it's 3 a.m. out there. I'd love to see what the numbers look like for in terms of viewership.
This is just like classic baseball where like, In the fall, when they have award season, they'll schedule like the MVP presentation during like a primetime football game, or they'll have the draft at a weird time, or they just never really seem to figure out the whole like, let's try to get a big audience. And we're buddies with the San Diego radio guys, Ben and Woods, and they had a watch party at 3 a.m. for their Padres. This is just like the most anticipated debut for a player in a while with Ohtani as a Dodger. And there's so much hype and anticipation. And for them to not even, I feel like, market this as they probably should have, to have it at 3 a.m., it's just the most baseball thing of all time.
Yeah, it's the it's where we are in baseball right now, where we're doing like, we're making steps to try to do cool things. We're doing all these little, you know, bringing in fans, and then just right at the last minute, not doing it the right way and not making it as good as it can be. Something similar with the breakout series, where it was just, you know, one game, not a big deal, but it could have been something amazing. Same with this.
Also, yeah, I didn't watch a breakout game because I didn't know they were happening half the time. And also, I feel like we as a sport should be at the point where every spring training game should be televised. There's no, like, there was an Orioles Pirates, Paul Skeens versus Jackson Holliday earlier this spring. And it was like, is this on TV anywhere? No. Okay. Well, we can't watch a cool, like, baseball matchup that probably won't happen for a while with Skeens and Holliday. It's like, kind of would have liked to seen that. I don't know. That would have been cool.
Yeah. You could argue that those are two bigger names than almost like half the guys in the league right now. People care about Paul Skeens, Livy's boyfriend, and Jackson Holliday. But yeah, I know. All I got to see was recorded versions of it and clips on social.
Yeah, like the team like clips that they made with their cameras. It's so dumb. Yeah. My thing, though, with the international series is like, I don't have a problem with them doing it because it's like, I love growing the game overseas. I think the World Baseball Classic we saw last time was a big thing for that. If they're going to do like international series and international games, we've got to move the start time. I don't know what that would be in Japan, Korea time, but we can't be having it 3 a.m. West Coast time for West Coast teams. Like that's insane. It also, like, I guess logistically, I would prefer to have it closer to the actual opening day, which is 8 days from now, not now. And then we have to go back and they have to go back to Arizona and play three more spring games. The Dodgers and Padres do. I had this thought. I was like, you think other sports leagues would do this poorly? You think Roger Goodell in the NFL would have an international game? Like they have theirs at like 9 a.m., which is kind of great. I don't know. I feel like baseball kind of fumbled it.
No, with football, it's great. You wake up on Sunday morning and there's football going on right there. I know the NBA, they do kind of a similar thing where they'll go play games overseas, but those are the preseason games. They don't count. And they're playing against, you know, the local EuroLeague team or the, I think the Chinese, the CBA, the Chinese Basketball Association. So yeah, it just feels like a weird move to me, especially because, you know, everyone gets so excited. Oh, it's opening day. Here we go. And then we have to wait a whole another week for the real games to start. Like now I feel like, oh, baseball's back. Here we're going. And it's not.
It's such a tease. Yeah. Like once official opening day happens, like everybody's so excited. It's like hope springs eternal. Everybody's 0-0. Oh, actually the Dodgers and Padres have already played a series like a week ago that they're counted one as a regular season game. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Yoshinobu Yamamoto's debut, which will be, I guess, late tonight or early tomorrow morning, is going to be in Korea for the first time as opposed to in Dodger Stadium. And I didn't even know that they have to go back to Arizona to keep playing games. I thought the whole point of it was that they could go to LA or San Diego and then, you know, move in and then still be able to recover there, but not even to be able to do that.
Nope.
That's crazy. Think about
this. See you back at the Peoria Sports Complex soon. Yeah.
Yeah. For Dylan Cease too. Think about it for him. He just got traded to the Padres and, you know, going straight to Korea, making his debut in a inner squad or what is it? A spring training game against the, I think it was the LG Twins, I want to say, which is the Korean team out there. And then he's going to go back to Arizona. He probably hasn't even bought a house in San Diego, hasn't even moved in.
Yeah. That's a great point. The logistical part of this game is insane. Like we'll talk to some guys. It's like, yeah, I just lived in a hotel all year. Just kind of bounced around.
Couldn't imagine. It makes for good stories when you talk about, you know, Juan Soto not wanting to buy a real bed because he wouldn't be on double A very long, but practically it doesn't really work.
It's insane. I did just want to mention this. I saw this tweet from John Morosi. I had so many questions. John Morosi said, I'd like to talk about Mookie Betts. The Dodgers had a day off yesterday. Mookie showed up to the ballpark to take ground balls. He cares about his craft that much. His teammates took note. Tonight, he won his first opening day start at shortstop. This is just weird. I don't get what he was trying to do here. This almost sounded like it was written by somebody other than John Paul Morosi. Like, is he saying like his teammates took note of how much he cares as if his teammates don't care? Why are we flagging how much he cares? Everybody cares.
Yeah, I guess the bar is pretty low for, you know, a former MVP to just be taking ground balls. I mean, hats off to Mookie to be doing it. It should be expected. Yeah, it doesn't really feel like something noteworthy to call out. Just getting guy getting an extra work in.
It's so weird. Like Mookie Betts is awesome. He's like one of the best things in baseball. It's like his podcast has done such like so many great things for, you know, the growing the sport and media. And it's just weird for John Paul Morosi to be like, you know what, this guy working on the thing that he gets paid to do, good for him. It's like, shouldn't everybody be doing that? So that was weird, but we'll stick in the NL West. Talk about Blake Snell. Blake Snell finally agreed to a deal this spring. He signed a 2-year, $62 million deal with an opt-out after this year with the San Francisco Giants. That was a lot less than the $150 the Yankees offered him and the $270 he wanted at the beginning of the year. But I did say 3-for-90 in my official prediction with opt-outs. So that's pretty good.
That's
pretty good.
Chalk that one up as a win.
Yes. I'm going to give myself like 65% credit. This is good for the Giants, I guess, for trying, but we'll start with like the Boris side of this. Have you seen the heat that the Boris Corp has been getting online?
I haven't seen anything specifically, but it doesn't surprise me. I mean, you know, he's been talking this big game for years about, oh, everyone's going to get, and it worked for a bit. We had guys getting huge deals who probably didn't deserve it. And now when you've got a guy like Blake Snell, who, I mean, 270 felt a little bit optimistic, but 150 felt pretty good. I mean, he's coming off of Cy Young. And to him to only get a one-year deal, which is what it is, I would be surprised if he opts in for the next year. Yeah, it just feels like a kind of a failure to me.
Yeah, I think I made a video where I was like, look, with the Bellinger signing, he got 3-for-80 with opt-outs. I was like, you know what? That kind of makes sense because Cody had like one great year and then the last couple were not very good. So yeah, that felt like an opt-out type of deal for him. He lost me at the Chapman one. The Chapman one for the Giants was basically it's like 1 year, 18 with two and a signing bonus, so 1-for-20. I'm like, Matt Chapman shouldn't be doing 1 year deals. Like, and same thing with Blake Snell essentially signing a 1 year deal. It's like these guys are past the point where they should be doing prove it contracts every single year.
Yeah, I mean Blake Snell what more is he going to do to prove himself from besides winning the Cy Young? I mean, he had a great year. If he goes out and replicates that again, is another team finally going to be like, oh, well, now we'll give you 150 because you did it 2 years in a row? Or is he just going to be settling on huge one-year prove-it deals for the rest of his career, which you know he doesn't want to do? You know, it kind of feels like the Giants, honestly, played this hand perfectly and took advantage of Scott Boras because, you know, him, you got Blake Snell came in late, Matt Chapman came in late. I'm not sure if Soler is a Boras guy. He feels like he might be. They got him on a steal too. Yeah, it just, you know, whoever Farhan Zaidi was, had running point on those negotiations, whether it was him or someone else, they did a great job. They all just kind of fell into their lap.
Yeah, like it always happens. Like if you wait it out, if you're a team and you're like, when you have the Boras Four sitting out there deep into March, what do you have to lose by waiting to scoop them up on basically 1 year contracts?
Yeah.
Or way less. Like Chapman should be getting $100 million deal. Like there's no reason why he shouldn't be getting 20 something a year. But like the Snell thing was so interesting. You're right. Just for Blake to come into this offseason asking for long-term financial stability and to walk away with, oh God, I have to pitch like a Cy Young again. It's kind of a bummer.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just like, let's say he goes out there and has a bad year or even worse, has a completely average year for Blake Snell. I just wonder what's going to happen to him and what the market's going to look like.
If you look at Blake Snell's like history year by year, it's weird. He'll have like good year, bad, good year. Yeah. Okay. Year. It's like each is like an alternating one. So maybe that kind of hurt him. Also, I think he led the league in walks last year, which yeah. I guess he got lucky and pitched out of a lot of those. But yeah,
he also doesn't go too long deep into games. I'm sure, you know, all these things have been said about why teams didn't want to pay him.
Yeah, so it's kind of weird. But hey, we'll talk about the Giants though. Like Snell, Chapman, Younghoon Lee, Soler, Jordan Hicks is just a starter now. Mm-hmm. Robbie Ray. They are now way over the second luxury tax threshold. They're over $257 million in payroll. So they're going to end up losing a second round pick and a third round pick and also have to pay $1 million. This is a very bold move by the Giants. What do we think about their moves they've made and where do you think they stand in the NL West this year?
Yeah, I'll take the second question first. I mean, they're not ahead of the Dodgers. I'll tell you that. I wouldn't really put them ahead of the Diamondbacks either based on what they're coming off of and what, you know, what they added with Eduardo Rodriguez and Eugenio Suarez too. So, you know, maybe they're competing with the Padres for third. Maybe that's a wild card spot. Maybe they're lucky, you know, they're a team you don't want to face in the playoffs if you got to go face Robbie Ray, Blake Snell, and Logan Webb. So maybe they're just a get-in type of team, but, you know, I definitely don't see them winning the West, and I don't know if they're going to be even close to it.
I think you're right. I think they're a little bit better than the Diamondbacks. I could see them being like a 86, 87 win team. I mean, the Diamondbacks got in with 84 and they went to the World Series. So I think between them and the Diamondbacks, the Dodgers, the Giants, the Padres, they're all going to be above 500 to varying degrees, which is hard in a division where normally in your division, there's got to be a couple bad teams for that many good teams to exist. But I think everybody's just going to beat up on the Rockies, unfortunately.
Yeah, I was about to say, they got one really bad team that they can all get a couple W's off of.
Yeah, so I feel bad for Colorado. It's like they're just going to get blown out every single game. I like the Padres more than probably most people do. If you look at the Padres rotation, and we'll probably do this a lot more next week when we do like an official preview pod, but like... Mm-hmm. I like Michael King and Dylan Cease and Java Joe Musgrove and Yu Darvish. Like, that's a great 1-4.
It's pretty solid. I mean, and they've got about as good of a 1-4 in the lineup, too, as anyone else does. You know, Machado, Tatis, Bogarts, Cronenworth, and Kim. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, that doesn't get much better. It's just the drop-off after that is pretty drastic.
And we can have the same debate about the Dodgers lineup, too. Like, I don't love the back end of the Dodgers with Jason Hayward, Gavin Lux, and James Outman, who strikes out every time. Like, they're each one of these teams has question marks. Also, Tyler Glasnow is just a walk machine now, so they got to figure that out. God loves walking people. We'll do a little more of this probably next week. We'll do an official preview pod, but NL West is going to be a juggernaut this year.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch for sure.
Last up this week, we're going to talk about the New York Yankees, something that Ricky knows all too well, living in the New York tri-state area. They're just falling apart, it feels like. I don't know how else to phrase the setup to this, but Gerrit Cole out 1 to 2 months. Doesn't need Tommy John, though. DJ LeMahieu has a bone bruise. Won't make opening day, probably. Marcus Stroman says he doesn't want to pitch on opening day. Like, I know Judge just came back, but, like, when you look at, like, the Yankees as a whole, like, it can't bode well if you're a Yankees fan seeing all of this.
No, can't at all. And I will say, I'm a native New Yorker, but I'm a Mets fan, so I'm silently loving the Yankees' downfall right now. But here's the thing. This is my thing with the Yankees. There's just so many – if all of this stuff has to go right for them to be good, if Stanton returns to form, if Glaber has a good year, if Gerrit Cole comes back and pitches well, if Rodon is himself again, which I think he will be, if Stroman is first half Stroman instead of second half, I mean, all these things have to go right. There's not been – you know, there's not a lot of stuff that they can really count on to be good. Even Judge, you know, he'll be one of the best players in the league when he's healthy, but we're already seeing he's – already not healthy, and you know, hopefully he can push that aside. I mean, this team probably has the highest upside, the highest ceiling and floor of any team in the league. You know, we saw the floor last year.
Floor's pretty bad. If floor is 82 wins and a lot of dysfunction and them almost firing their manager, I feel like the Judge thing's so interesting because, like, so it was in his abs this time. He had that toe thing last year. For this is a guy who's scheduled to play all of this year in center field where you're just, I don't know where I saw somebody talk about this. Maybe it was Mookie Betts talking about moving to the infield where it was like the distance you have to run from the dugout to center field every single time. Like people don't understand how far that is. You just do like quite often. Yeah. So like that's going to play into this like whole situation with Aaron Judge is like, yeah, maybe he's not running and diving for stuff all the time, but every half inning he goes out there, he's going to have to run like, I don't know how many hundreds of yards that is, but I don't like it. I don't like the stuff that's coming out of Yankees camp right now. Like I would be worried.
Yeah. I mean, I would be too. I mean, he's shown that he can do it, but you know, I mean, I think he had a quote early in spring where he said that his toe is probably never going to be this. He's never going to be 100%. It's never going to be the same. And like, that's not what I want to hear from him. You know, I remember when he was going through the free agent process, everyone was worried. You know, we've never seen a player like this before. His body might start to break down and not be able to handle it. And, you know, I wouldn't say we're there yet, but showing a lot of signs of it for sure. Yeah, the whole Judge and center field thing to me, it just kind of just felt like an unnecessary risk. You know, I mean, I know you want to get your best four bats out there with the outfield and the DH spot kind of being where they are for the Yankees right now, but they couldn't have gotten a center fielder instead of Verdugo and made that a little bit simpler. You know, it all kind of just comes down to Stanton kind of clogging up the DH spot, though, I will say.
Yeah, I think they got Stanton for like another like 3 or 4 years. 5 years?
It's 5 years, yeah.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. And he's not cheap either. So it's like, mm-hmm. I don't know if they just want to like eat that. But also just like the pitching. We don't like Carlos Rodon was so bad last year. And like, I know he's been carving it up this spring, but like, I don't know if they're getting what they paid for. And Marcus Stroman just saying straight up, don't pitch me on opening day. I don't want to. Wild move.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine that Rodon's going to be as bad as he was last year. He's just too good of a pitcher to be that bad. But, you know, you still never know what you're going to get with him, especially coming off the year he had. And with the Stroman move, it just baffles me that, you know, he came to the Yankees with all this history of bad blood that he had with the organization. And then they come to you and say, do you want to pitch on opening day? Which is, I get it. You're in Houston. He's not at home. But it's still opening day. That's every kid's dream. And to say no to that, especially, you know, 2.5 weeks in front of opening day feels like enough time to me to kind of fix your schedule up, which was, you know, the reason he said that he didn't want to. It just seems like a wild move to me to start out with so much hostility between yourself and the organization and fans, most importantly.
Stroman said, quote, I put a priority on the body. He told reporters after a 68-pitch outing on Thursday, people don't understand how much changing your schedule it is at this point in spring. It might seem like it's easy to do, but every little day matters. Yeah, you're right. That's such a big honor to be like the New York Yankees opening day starter. Like that's a cool thing that like you'll have for the rest of your life. And for him to be like, pass.
Yeah.
Then they have to make Nasty Nestor do it. Like Nestor Cortez is going to have to move his schedule around because apparently it was like Clark Schmidt, Nestor, and Cortez, all three of them, their schedules did not align with terms of opening day.
Yeah.
And Nestor, I was reading like last year, he had a hard time like in between starts recovering. And then he eventually went on the IL for all that time with a shoulder, pitched 63 innings. So if to make him have to mess up his schedule with his injury history, I don't like the way I feel like it's bad juju headed into to the season when your rotation is just hanging on by a thread.
Yeah, it's just not it's not a good start. You're just limping into opening day, which you want to be hitting that running. And yeah, I mean the Cole's a big loss for them. There's no one who can replicate that. But Stroman, if he's right, can be close.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we saw it in the first half last year. He was probably one of the best pitchers in the NL.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just a wild move to me to say no.
Man, this Yankees season, there's been no shortage of stuff to talk about on the airwaves of, was it WFAN in New York? Is that the big one?
WFAN.
Yeah. I'm sure the Michael Kay Show and all those people have lots to talk about.
Yeah,
it's crazy. So this week, we're back on a normal-ish schedule. Next week, we'll probably be doing a preview pod, so look out for that. This week's interview, though. So last week, we were fortunate enough to be down in Port Charlotte with the Tampa Bay Rays. Everybody down there was incredible. Thank you. Shout out to the Tampa Bay Rays organization for having us. This week, we're going to be doing an interview with Brandon Lau, Rays second baseman. Big year ahead for him. I can already feel it. Did like 15 with B. Lau. It was so cool. We have some more of these interviews that we'll be kind of releasing in the next coming weeks, months, that kind of stuff. But we'll start off this week with B. Lau. Ricky, you're the man. Thank you, as always, for the help. And let's send it over to my interview with Brandon Lau. Enjoy. We interrupt this episode to bring you a word from the official sponsor of Not For Long Media and the Breaking Bats podcast, the Original Fudge Kitchen. It is a staple of the Jersey Shore with six locations in Cape May, Wildwood, North Wildwood, Stone Harbor, and Ocean City. The Original Fudge Kitchen makes all of their fudge in-store, guaranteeing a delicious product, so stop by and let them know that Not For Long Media and Breaking Bats sent you. Check them out online at fudgekitchenswithans.com as they are shipping fudge and sweet treats all across the country. Now back to the episode. All right, Breaking Bats is here with Brandon Lau from the Tampa Bay Rays. Brandon, we really appreciate your time this morning. How are you doing?
Thanks for having me. I'm doing well. I'm grinding through spring training a little bit right now, and I think we're all ready for opening day, but you know, we got a couple more weeks left.
Yeah. So I definitely wanted to have you on because, like I said, we're from Maryland. I know you're a proud Maryland alumni. When you think back to your time at College Park, like how special of a time was that for you, just like trying to cut your teeth, really learn about the game?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the like key moments of my life, I feel like, developmental for that kind of stage to get me to where I am today. Can't thank the people there enough for everything that I went through and what I got to learn in my few years there at Maryland and getting into the weight room, learning about the game, understanding who I am as a player and all that kind of stuff. It really kind of molded me into a much more mature player than I was coming out of high school and, you know, led me down a much easier path to get me to where I am now.
I read that as like a smaller guy, you always had to be like the hardest worker in the room. Are you grateful to have those experiences and like, how has that kind of helped shaped who you are as a player?
Yeah. I mean, I was always smaller and I don't think looking back on it, I was never the most talented guy on the team. Dating back to high school and whatnot, there were guys that went to bigger colleges that had more college offers than me. And, you know, it was always something that was kind of instilled by my dad, whether it was, you know, hitting socks in the living room or anything like that. Like it was instilled to me at such a young age that I loved baseball and I loved doing that, but it really didn't feel like work. You know, I was just playing the game that I loved and I was doing more and more baseball whenever I could. And it, you know, started translating into, you know, it's just what I wanted to do in my free time. So if I can go to the cage and hit, I was just going to go to the cage and hit. And, you know, it just continues to help me develop and develop into a better player. And then, like I said, just getting to Maryland, you know, getting on a weight program, getting somebody to hold me accountable. You know, when I was in high school, there's no one that was going to make me go work out.
Mm-hmm.
You missed a workout in Maryland, they were going to make you wish that you never went to Maryland. So, you know, it was one of those things, you know, it the work ethic was there. Maryland drove it up even higher, and you know, just trying to become a better player, and you know, it all kind of became a perfect storm.
I know that you weren't always this like big prolific power hitter. Do you remember the moment where like something unlocked, where like something clicked, where you're like, I'm gonna start launching balls over the fence now?
Yeah, it was high A. So when I was down here in Port Charlotte for high A, I remember honestly dating back a few years prior, I sat down with a bunch of, we call them advisors at the time. You know, in college you're not allowed to have an agent, so you have an advisor, and meeting with multiple guys that were gonna represent me in the draft, and four or five different companies I met with, and every single one of them was, you know, we'll buy you a speaker, we'll get you these tickets to a concert. And I was like, I don't go to concerts. I don't, you know, I don't need all that kind of stuff. And then eventually met with the agency that I'm with now, and first thing out of his mouth was, I'm going to make you a big leaguer. We have a weight room, we have a strength guy, we have cages. I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure that you can buy those tickets yourself, or you can buy that speaker that you want yourself. And that was all I needed to hear. Went with them, got drafted, rehabbed the leg injury, got to Nashville to work out with him, and immediately started butting heads. He tried to change the way I swung. I said, I've swung this way for 20 years. I know what I'm doing. Went to low A. Hit like 240 with like four or five home runs. Came back the next year, tail tucked. And it's like, all right, you might know more than me. Let's figure this out. reinvented the swing, reinvented, you know, pretty much everything. Went into high A, and from then on, it was, you know, no looking back.
They're big on like, I know you do a lot with bands, and I think it's like they just said like gadgets. What did you use back then to like help you work on your game?
The core velocity belt is a big one. You know, it's big with pitchers right now, and you know, everyone that I ever see, I feel like is a pitcher using it. But the stuff that you can do and the feels that you can have with that belt and everything while you're hitting, it really helps you find your lower half, and that's where, you know, a lot of the power comes from.
It's also your hands too, right? I think somebody said you have like the quickest hands they've ever seen. Did that come naturally, or is that something you can learn?
That's something that, yeah, I think just because I've been swinging a bat for as long as I can remember. I think that was one of the biggest things when I was growing up, is I always had quick hands. Mm-hmm. You know, that was, honestly, it was kind of like my MO growing up. Is I was going to single you to death. Yeah, I was going to, like, I mean, when I was in college, I mean, I was hit 300 and hit four homers. Like, I wasn't scary. I wasn't a dangerous hitter. I wasn't going to strike out, but I wasn't going to do any kind of damage. And we had to understand what was going to kind of develop me into the player that I am, and, you know, what was going to get me to the big leagues. And, you know, if you took me back to college and you told me that I was going to have to hit a ball over 100, I would have told you that's not fair. I'm not big enough. And so it's just kind of, the hands were always there. That was always kind of something that I had, but it never really translated into what it is until I, you know, I got to feel the whole rest of my body work.
So this is year 7 with Tampa in the big leagues?
I think this is 6.
This is year 6? What is your style in the clubhouse? I always hear about like clubhouse leadership. I think I've read something about like Kevin Kiermaier was always the guy. When he left, like, was there like a void to fill, or was that more of a collective as a unit? Like, how did the Rays approach clubhouse leadership?
Yeah, so when I got called up, it was KK, and loved having KK be that guy. Never one time thought that, you know, I need to step into that role. Like, KK is going to be gone. I figured I was going to play with him forever. Then the next year, we got Zunino in. We had some other guys that, you know, they were, you know, veteran presences, and I didn't have to really step up. And then the year KK left, there was definitely a void. And the biggest thing that I understood is I was like, I'm not going to replace KK. Like, I'm not going to do what KK did. Nobody can do what KK did. Like, KK does his thing, and, you know, that works for him. But if somebody else hops up there and tries to do what KK does, we're going to roll our eyes. And,
yeah,
you know, this isn't, you're not doing it right or whatnot. So you had to find your own way to run the clubhouse or, you know, do whatever. And, you know, it's a very, very relaxed clubhouse, very family feel to it. You know, if I walk in, you're saying good morning or good afternoon to all your guys. And it's, you know, we're a very close-knit group, and that kind of makes it very easy, is you're not, you don't feel like you have to like set any boundaries or set any rules or anything like that. You know, it's very easygoing and everyone kind of understands, you know, what they need to do. Everyone's very mature. And, you know, that's one of the things that really makes our clubhouse great and easy is, you know, a new guy comes in, they fit in seamlessly, they do their work, and, you know, everybody else has a good time.
It's also cool that, like, one organization for as long as you have been. I was reading about you and your wife kind of, like, giving back to the local community and just, like, the charitable stuff that you guys do. How important is that for you guys to, like, have roots in the community and to be out there?
Yeah, and that was the biggest thing when, in 19, when we got to sign our deal. You know, it was, I think it was, get off the phone with our agent, say that we'll sign the deal. Next step was, how are we going to give back? You know, we got this, you know, guaranteed contract coming through. We know what we're going to make. How can we give back to the community in any kind of way possible? And then we started looking back on things that were very important to us and what really struck home to us. And that was the Crisis Center of Tampa Bay. We worked very closely with them with our Lives Legend or Home Runs for Hope campaign. Mm-hmm. Getting the youth into sports and getting them to really enjoy, you know, playing the game and stuff like that. So that's where Loud's Legends came in. And then most recently, we've kind of gotten into infertility and stuff like that. And, you know, it's always great to kind of be there and be a kind of someone up on a pedestal, a beacon of some sort of way to kind of bring attention to these issues that no one really understands or no one really wants to talk about, and to be able to let people know that it's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, talk about it. Well, people are there to help you get through it. And, you know, it's never great going through those things, but it's always great to be able to be there and help people that are going through it.
That's such a cool thing that you guys are doing. I definitely want to ask about that. All right, I just had a couple last quick kind of like rapid fire type questions. The Maryland state flag, is that the best in the country?
It's a pretty good flag. The jersey designs that you can do off that flag are fantastic. And it seems that the only people that agree are people that went to Maryland or are from Maryland.
Yeah, I definitely wear that with pride. Favorite spot to go out in like the DMV, College Park, DC area?
Oh God. Always had a thing for, you know, Bentley's, Cornerstone, and, you know, all that area over there on Route 1.
Do you ever get tired when people would think that you're the third low brother with Josh and Nate?
Honestly, at this point, it's just fun. You know, it's gotten to a point now where everybody has kind of emerged onto the big league scene. You know, Nate's won a World Series, a Silver Slugger, and a Gold Glove, I believe. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of put himself out there in his own right. You know, Josh goes out and has a phenomenal year last year. You know, I've done my stuff. And, you know, at this point now, it's if you were able to physically mess that up and truly believe that we're all related, we just run with it at this point because, yeah, you know, it's really, you're really trying at that point.
I would go along with it. Did you see the tweet last year where it was you three together and it was like Shorty got low, low, low?
That's fantastic. And it's stuff like that, you know, even if you pronounce it low at that point.
Joe Buck in the All-Star game.
That one was a little upsetting.
Yeah. You would think there'd be a pronunciation guide up there.
You know, All-Star game, kind of one of the biggest.
It's a big deal.
Yeah. Kind of one of the biggest things. And I think Merton mispronounced the name before me as well. So he hit two in a row.
Damn it, Joe Buck. Favorite at-bat of your career?
Oh man. Purely swing based, I go back and I watch the home run off Paxton in like the 2020 season quite a bit. I don't know why, it just is one of those at bats that I was just like, I felt so good in that at bat. I just want to emulate what I did here. Mm-hmm. So that's always, you know, one that I go back and watch of me personally.
All right, last question. If you had to start a podcast with a Rays teammate, who would you pick?
Oh, strictly because of our conversations at dinner last night, I think I'd go McClanahan.
Ooh.
Just because I think it would be nonstop bickering between the two of us, and I think that it would probably make for pretty good a pretty good podcast.
I would listen. I heard he's nasty at Call of Duty too.
I don't agree. Probably gets carried all the time. I've never watched him play, but you know, I can't talk him up that well.
That's what the guy Brian O'Grady. I don't know if you remember him from 2020. He's just like, he shared a room with him, and just like the stories of like that alt site with Shane McClanahan.
Right? Oh, I got to imagine that they probably played a couple games during that time.
Yeah, no, it was so cool. This has been incredible. Thank you so much for your time. Best of luck this season, and can't thank you enough.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
And before we get out of here, a special thank you to the band Stick Figure for allowing us to use today's intro and outro music.